from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Beloved comedian and actor Robin Williams died yesterday at age 63, an apparent suicide at his home across the bay from San Francisco. His irrepressible improvisation, ricochet comedy, took him to television in the late 1970s with Mork and Mindy and far beyond in life. He had starring roles in The World According to Garp, Dead Poets Society, Good Will Hunting, Mrs. Doubtfire, Aladdin, and many more. He also suffered from addiction and depression. This hour, On Point, remembering the great Robin Williams. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What's your favorite Robin Williams moment? How will you remember him? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. In a moment, we'll hear from comedians Joan Rivers and Jimmy Tingle. We'll hear from David Itzkoff at the New York Times, who wrote up Robin Williams' life and death today. Everybody just trying to take this on board. Let's hear from Robin Williams himself. Here he was, stand-up comedian, had that rapid-fire delivery, improvisation that just never quit. One of his most memorable performances was called Come Inside My Mind, and it got laughs and let the audience into his thoughts as he performed. The result was this kind of manic, self-aware back and forth of personalities that tested the audience to decide what bits he would perform.
Come inside my mind and see what it's like when a comedian eats the big one. Come on in. Ha! I'm doing brilliant. I'm improvising like crazy. No, you're not, you fool. You're just doing pee-pee caca, no substance. You're not talking about any truth, no realities. Why don't you change the nature of man instead of just talking about drugs and people passing out? Help the world!
Shut up, both of you. I'm the rational mind. We'll have to release the subconscious. He'll be the arbitrator. Not tonight.
Page intellect. Page and intellect. Sequence 2B. Amrek phase in. Ego check.
Too late. Sequence phasing in now. Killer routine. 1B. Phase in now.
These two goys walk into a bar.
Early. Positive response. Go to killer routine. B. Phasing in now. Ego check again. Hey, I'm fantastic. Too late. Phasing in now. Moving in.
Where are you from?
Early warning signals. Go to secondary routine now. Anything goes. Try dynamite drug routine. 1B. Killer response. Tragically hip routine. Phasing in now.
How about that Babylonian Tupperware?
Mayday! Mayday! Mayday!
Robin Williams with Come Inside My Mind, giving just a sense of what went on when he was on fire with comedy, and he was on fire with comedy a lot. He was also a dramatic actor who won an Academy Award for his role in the 1997 Good Will Hunting. Here's a scene where his character there, to go to the dramatic side, psychiatrist Sean McGuire in Good Will Hunting, tells a story about his wife to Will Hunting, played by Matt Damon, to make a point about love and intimacy and imperfection.
My wife used to fart when she was nervous. She had all sorts of wonderful little idiosyncrasies. You know, she used to fart in her sleep. I'm sorry I shared that with you. One night it was so loud it woke the dog up. She woke up and got like, oh, was that you? See, I didn't have the heart to tell her. Oh, God.
She woke herself up?
Yes. Oh, Christ. But Will, she's been dead 2 years, and that's I remember. It's wonderful stuff, you know? Little things like that.
Yeah, but those are the things I miss the most. The little idiosyncrasies that only I knew about. That's what made her my wife. Boy, and she had the goods on me, too. She knew all my little peccadilloes. People call these things imperfections, but they're not. Oh, that's the good stuff. And then we get to choose who we let into our weird little worlds. You're not perfect, sport. And let me save you the suspense. This girl you met, she isn't perfect either. But the question is whether or not you're perfect for each other. That's the whole deal. That's what intimacy is all about.
Robin Williams in Good Will Hunting, talking about the pains in life, the imperfections, the peccadilloes. Joan Rivers joins us in a moment to remember Robin Williams. Jimmy Tingle, comedian as well. With me now from New York is David Itzkoff, culture reporter for the New York Times. You can link to his story on the life and death of Robin Williams today in the Times at our site, website, onpointradio.org. David, thank you very much for being with us.
Sure, thank you.
Have we learned any more about the details of his death at this point? The sheriff was pretty forthcoming. Apparent suicide. Do we know any more?
Not as of the moment that you and I are speaking. The sheriff's office there in Marin County, I mean, they put out a statement pretty rapidly yesterday, just that the I guess this all happened around noon West Coast time, that a 911 call was made and emergency personnel and authorities were on the scene, and this person was pronounced dead pretty soon after. There is a press conference planned for later this morning. I imagine they'll share some more of the details as they learn them. I believe there's also an autopsy for today. I think it's still pretty shocking. I don't to people who knew him. I had a couple of opportunities to encounter him in my reporting. Even people who knew about his problems, I think this was really startling that this is how his life would end.
The outpouring of love and respect and dismay in social media for Robin Williams over the last 18 hours or so, just incredible. Can you remember the last time we saw a comedian actor go with this kind of immediate embrace? Maybe it's the social media era that makes it feel so big, so deep.
I mean, it's interesting that you point to social media, which is very much a symptom of the 21st century, mm-hmm. and yet here's Robin Williams, who maybe is among the very last of the actor comedians who really touched everyone. I mean, all generations and all walks of life, whatever age you might be, there's at least one performance of his that you probably connected with in some personal and intimate way. There aren't very many people left that we can say that about, certainly not in his line of work, I think. And that's part of what people are responding to. I mean, certainly the sad circumstances, the suddenness, but just the breadth of his body of work and not only the variety of roles, but just the warmth that seemed to be in all of them. And whatever kind of person you were, there's probably one performance of his that's in your top 10 somewhere.
And many generations, as you say, who have laughed along with him, been brought to tears with him. He started so long ago. I mean, here we lose him at age 63, but he was active all the way back in the late 1970s. Here's a little bit from that first sitcom, Mork and Mindy. In this scene, Mork's reporting to his superior off the planet, Orson.
Believe it or not, trees are green on Earth. There's a black liquid that sells for $3 a pound, and it takes two to tango.
I mean something really important.
Yes. Remember that girl I told you about?
Yes.
Well, she did something very nice. She defended me against her father. That was a very brave and kind thing to do, and I don't know, I think I'm coming down with feelings for her.
Robin Williams, 1978 to 82 in Mork and Mindy. Tell us about Robin Williams' youth. Where did he grow up? What were the circumstances that produced this guy, this comedian actor?
Part of his life was spent in the suburbs of Detroit, and his father was a very successful automobile executive. And certainly from the way that Robin told it, it sounded like his upbringing there was very lonely and very private. A lot of time spent alone in a very big household with basically his toys and his imagination. Another part of his youth was also spent in Marin County in California, and that would become his home pretty much for the rest of his life. Very quickly, you know, from that kind of an upbringing, went to the Juilliard School in New York to study acting. He studied there for, I believe, 2 or 3 years. Didn't complete the program, though, because there was just so much opportunity for him so rapidly.
Same time as Christopher Reeve was there, who played Superman.
That's right. They were friends and roommates. Yes, that's right.
Was it clear from the beginning that he would be a comedian? Was he looking to be a straight actor at the outset?
It seemed clear that he just had so much energy that was going in so many different directions. There are people if you flip through Twitter now, you'll find people posting photos and even video of sort of spontaneous street performances that he would do in New York City, whether they were just kind of wild improvisations that kind of prefigured his stand-up comedy. He would do mime performances, which seems almost hard to believe because his voice is so crucial to what he does. But he just really seemed to take to any kind of outlet that he could find that would let him showcase his comedy.
That frenetic mind was a super blessing for us and for his career. Did he also describe it as a burden?
Well, I think that he had different layers to himself. I think that it certainly in the time that I got to spend with him, he was not necessarily the same person that you would see on a stage or on a film set, who just seems to be kind of frantically, you know, spouting off jokes and one-liners and voices, although those did slip in even into his conversations. Even in a very sort of quiet 1 a.m. chat with him, he might still do a voice or drop a one-liner on you. But his energy, personal energy, was much calmer and much more even. Certainly later in his life, in my experience, I think that that was a part of him that I think he just put forward to an audience. It was a way to just kind of almost keep them at bay.
Keep them at bay with all that energy. David Itzkoff with the New York Times, please stand by. We're talking this hour with the great Robin Williams, extraordinary comedian, actor, cultural presence, who died yesterday in California of apparent suicide at 63. Theme from Mork and Mindy behind us here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the great Robin Williams, extraordinary comedian, actor, cultural presence, who died yesterday in California of apparent suicide at 63. Here's a little bit of 1987 Barry Levinson's film Good Morning, Vietnam. Starred Robin Williams as a DJ on Armed Forces Radio in the Vietnam War.
Good morning, Vietnam! Hey, this is not a test. This is rock and roll. Time to rock it from the Delta to the DMZ. Is that me or does that sound like an Elvis Presley movie? Viva Da Nang. Oh, Viva Da Nang. Da Nang me, why don't they get a rope and hang me? Hey, is this a little too early for being that loud? Hey, too late.
Robin Williams in Good Morning Vietnam. The man could rev it up, and he did again and again and again. David Itzkoff with the New York Times is with us. He's written up the life and sad death of Robin Williams in the Times today. With us from New York. Also with us from New York right now, actress, comedian, writer, producer, television host Joan Rivers. Joan, thank you very much for joining us today. I'm sorry that it has to be around this really sad news of Robin Williams leaving us.
Shocking news.
Did you see a tortured soul, Joan?
Well, you know, you don't see it. We're all tortured comedians. You know, I mean, he was wild, he was manic, he was crazy, he went off on tangents, but that's what made him brilliant. And no, tortured, no. And you wish you had seen it, so maybe we could have all helped him a little more. But absolutely, this blindsided me.
I mean, in the world of comedians, did people look at Robin Williams and his manic brilliance and say, nobody can keep that up?
Well, he certainly kept it up for a long time.
He did.
Kept it up for 35 years, and that was just his style, that crazed, way out there style. What I'm surprised at is maybe the depression came from, this sounds so stupid, he was such a fine actor, and he never really was acknowledged as that. You know, I saw him in a Tiger at the Baghdad Zoo. I saw him in Waiting for Godot. And I saw him
on Broadway, yeah.
On Broadway, and nobody realized there was that whole other side to him that maybe was one of the great frustrations.
Of course, he had that Oscar on his mantelpiece, or wherever Robin Williams kept it. Talk about his craft as a comedian. Did you see it, Joan Rivers, as craft, or was this just an on-fire mind that you just let go and it went where it went?
Well, I never talk about craft because
okay.
I'm just an old Vegas comic. But he certainly was amazingly funny. He was great to interview. When you saw him coming down the red carpet, you knew the next 10 minutes are going to be magical. And he never disappointed. He would go off on, he was one of the most brilliant improvisers. He would see things crookedly, which is the way a great comic sees them. And everything, when you think of the body of work and the different the different characterizations, you know, going from Mrs. Doubtfire to the genie in Aladdin. I mean, and then you forget Fisher King, where he was so tender and precise. It's just such a loss to the artistic community. But more than that, because I come from a husband who committed suicide, the depths of despair must have been beyond incredible. And that makes me so so terribly sad.
Joan Rivers, what do you wish you could have said to Robin Williams? Well, I mean, you know suicide from your own husbands.
I work on suicide survivors. My daughter and I are very active in that. You always want to say suicide is a final solution to a temporary problem. But you just wish somebody had been able to reach him to get him out of that depth. And obviously the family tried. It was a loving family. But God knows what demons were inside of him.
David Itzkoff, Robin Williams was in for rehab for drugs not so long ago, and he talked about it openly. Was he public about about this struggle and its burden on him?
There were parts that he certainly was very open about. If you go all the way back to the comedy routines of the 70s and 80s where he's talking about his cocaine abuse, and then even after he went into Hazelden in 2006 for alcohol abuse, that became part of the routine that he started doing in 2008, 2009. The struggle with depression, though, I don't know his work verbatim. I can't really recall him addressing that part of his life in his comedy, and it's very possible that that's something that audiences at least did not know to the same degree as some of the other issues that we talked about here.
He talked with Diane Sawyer in 2006. Joan Rivers, David Itzkoff, listen here. This is Robin Williams talking about recovering from addiction.
You're back and you realize the thing that matters are others, way beyond yourself. Self goes away. Ego, bye-bye. Realize there are a lot of amazing people out there to be grateful for, and a loving God. And that, other than that, good luck. That's what life is about.
Robin Williams in 2006. Joan Rivers, what was he like off stage?
First of all, something just hit me when we were just talking.
Yeah.
You know, the other comic that worked the most like Robin was Jonathan Winters.
Yes.
The cap is off the bottle comedy.
Yeah, freewheeling all the way.
All this genius. And Jonathan Winters is also a terribly dark, dark man privately. But I never saw that. Every time I saw Robin, and it was always, we never had our little intimate dinners together. We always met at a party or, you know, on a dais. Always full of fun, always manners. You never could get a real conversation going with him.
Because he was, the cap was off the bottle, because he was letting it flow.
Letting it flow, and maybe when you hit a nerve, he took that nerve and bounced it out and made it funny. When I look back, I've sat down with Woody Allen, we've had conversations, you sit down with Letterman, you have conversations, you know, friends, Michael, I was going to say Michael Carlin, that's my accountant, George Carlin, close enough, looking back, we never, ever talked, say, 20 minutes about anything seriously. And I think it must have been so hidden and bottled up inside of him.
Joan Rivers, we really appreciate your spending a couple of minutes with us today remembering Robin Williams. How will you think of him as the years roll on, Joan?
Brilliant. Brilliant. Just look at him on... Just watch those specials. The energy, the physicality... And everyone I keep going back to forgets what a fine actor. All great comedians scratch him, and I would have loved to have seen him do Lear.
Wow.
That's how he should have gone out.
Yeah, that would have been great. Joan Rivers.
Make a joke? A very thin Ophelia, because you can't.
You're the comedian, so was he. You go. Yeah.
Thank you so much. And may I say one thing? I know, Dave, I love your book, Cocaine Son. Thank you both very much.
Joan Rivers, joining us from New York. Thank you for joining us.
Bye-bye.
Yes, Dave Itzkoff, who's written about cocaine in the family in his own book, Cocaine Son, a memoir about his father's cocaine addiction. Joan Rivers talked about Robin Williams' live comedy specials. Here he was live at the Met in 1986, riffing on cocaine addiction, which he himself had struggled with.
Here's a little warning sign if you have a cocaine problem. First of all, if you come home to your house, you have no furniture, and your cat's going, I'm out of here, warning. Number two, if you have this dream where you're doing cocaine in your sleep, and you can't fall asleep, and you're doing cocaine in your sleep, and you can't fall asleep, and you wake up and you're doing cocaine, bingo. Number three, If on your tax form it says $50,000 for snacks, mayday. You got yourself a cocaine problem, smartass.
And in that same year, 1986, Robin Williams talked with 60 Minutes about his love of comedy, how it helped him.
For me, it's therapy. It's another world for me. It's so much. It's such a great release, because I was trained as an actor, and I started doing comedy because I couldn't find any work in plays, and I found this place where I could do whatever I wanted, and it was me, and I didn't have to say it with someone else's words. It's basically mine. So if it didn't work, I have to take the same responsibility. But it was such freedom. It's wonderful. It's great. It's a whole other world.
Robin Williams, 1986 on 60 Minutes. Comedy for him, therapy. Catherine in Austin, Texas. Catherine, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm. What's your observation?
Well, just growing up, Robin Williams was just a huge part of my childhood from all of the movies like Hook and Mrs. Doubtfire and Aladdin. But upon hearing his passing last night, I just had to take a moment to reflect because my father has bipolar disorder, and just hearing that someone will end their life over something that is that I know very close to my heart is just a temporary thing, that the suffering can be so deep that it just made me reach out to my dad and send him some messages and let him know that I love him and that I care for him and that nothing should ever come to that. And my dad sent me a message back and said that the demons aren't with him right now, but hearing stories like this helps him realize that there is a way out and this isn't the way that it has to be.
Catherine, good luck to your father, and I appreciate your call. David Itzkoff, the Robin Williams story, even now, getting really deeply two people there, right in the middle of a father-daughter relationship. Let me get one more. Tom in Norfolk, Virginia. Tom, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I just want to take a moment and say thank you to Robin for all he did for the military. I had a son in 2004 who was deployed in Iraq, was having a very difficult time, and my emails and Skyping to him would help him along, but it didn't get him through. And one day he just sent me this email, all in caps, about how Robin had flown out to their forward base where they were, spent about 20, 30 minutes with them, and it changed my boy's life, made him feel a lot better. Like, he did more in 5 minutes than I had done in 2 months. And I'm deeply grateful to him for that. And I think if the military had known the guy was in trouble, a lot of people would have stepped up to help him.
Yeah, their sight unseen, Robin Williams, sitting down with your son in Iraq and bringing him some comfort. That's a great story, Tom, and I really appreciate your call. David Itzkoff, standby in New York with us right now from Los Angeles, is Jason Eric Schiffman. He's director at the UCLA Dual Diagnosis Program at the David Geffen School of Medicine. It's an 8-week outpatient program that treats patients with addiction and other conditions that come with addiction, including depression. Jason Eric Schiffman, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
You, like all of us, surely knew Robin Williams' work, and you probably followed, to the degree he was public about it, his struggles with addiction and depression. At the same time, do you presume some link between those, Jason?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Robin Williams wasn't a patient of mine, so mm-hmm. you know, I'm reluctant to comment too specifically on things specific to him. However, there is a very well-characterized association between addiction and depression. And, you know, one of the things that we emphasize in my program at UCLA is that, you know, addiction is basically a solution that becomes its own problem. It's you know, the symptoms of addiction are often much more visible than the problem that they're a solution for. And those problems tend to resolve relatively quickly once somebody stops using. And unfortunately, what happens then is that they're then, you know, often left without, you know, when they stop the drugs, they are left without a solution for the original emotional problem. And that's a much quieter problem that often isn't seen. And, you know, it's often difficult, especially when, you know, the friends and family are congratulating the individual on getting sober and everything is supposed to magically kind of come into place. And actually things often at the beginning of sobriety feel much worse because, again, that tool that you know, was there for the depression or for the anxiety or for whatever other emotional problems may be there, is no longer available. And it can take some time to really find other tools to heal what was behind, you know, those difficulties.
David Itzkoff, Robin Williams went back into rehab this summer to fine-tune, was the word that came out from his publicist, his sobriety. How public was he about his difficulties there?
Well, these are things that would come out, I think, sort of after the fact. It, once they were public knowledge, certainly in the past, he had no qualms about making these things part of his comedy routines. Once they became part of his public persona, he would never try to deny them or back away from them. He was very open about himself in that way. But I also I expect that we will probably learn other details in the days ahead, you know. I think there probably were just pieces of the puzzle that you know, no one in the general public had. It was really just it's still such a shocking event, and really even to go from some of the depths that we're talking about to you know, the means by which he appears to have ended his life, it seems like we are still missing some of the dots to connect all that.
Jason, is this a failure of whoever was working with Robin Williams on rehab, on treating him, or is this, you know, tragically just? I don't even know what to call it. Is it a failure of treatment?
No, I wouldn't say that it's a failure of treatment. You know, it's suicide is unfortunately just notoriously difficult to predict, at least in the acute sense. You know, there's lots of factors that we know about that are related to you know, an increased risk for suicide, but nothing that, other than acute anxiety, other than that, there's nothing that's really been identified as something to indicate that, you know, somebody's suicide is imminent. You know, and I think the other thing that's important to keep in mind is that, you know, when somebody's in a major depressive episode, and I'm not sure that that's what Robin Williams was in at the time that he killed himself, but you know, it's really they're viewing the world and themselves through a depressive lens, and it can be very difficult to make sense out of the decision to end one's life when you're not in a major depressive episode. There's lots of distortions that result from that. So you know, I think that, you know, as Joan Rivers was saying earlier in the program, you know, suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. You know, it can make perfect sense to the person at the time, even though they may not, you know, when not in a major depressive episode, have come to the conclusion that that was the right thing to do.
We've got to take it out to a break here, but we're very grateful to you for joining us, Jason Eric Schifflin at the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Behind us right here, the great Robin Williams, performing Frank Sinatra's My Way in Spanish as a penguin in the 2006 animated movie Happy Feet. David Itzkoff with the New York Times, please stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about remembering the great Robin Williams. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the great Robin Williams this hour, of course, lost to us by suicide, the police say, at 63 yesterday in California. But what a life, what a career, how many people he moved from high comedy to high drama. Here he was in the 1992 animated film Aladdin, playing the genie of many voices. In this scene, after Aladdin rubs the magic lamp, the genie pops out with one big multi-voice introduction.
The ever impressive.
The long contained.
Copy of and imitated.
But never duplicated.
Duplicated.
Genie of the lamp.
direct from the lamp right here for your very much wish fulfillment.
And here he is, Robin Williams, the 1989 film Dead Poets Society. He's the excitable John Keating, poetry teacher in a 1950s all-boys boarding school. In this scene, Keating takes his class on a tour of the school hallways lined with the pictures of long-dead alumni and explains the essence of the Latin phrase, carpe diem.
Seize the day. Gather ye rosebuds while ye may. Why does the writer use these lines?
Because he's in a hurry.
No. Ding. Thank you for playing anyway. Because we are food for worms, lads. Because believe it or not, each and every one of us in this room is one day going to stop breathing, turn cold, and die. I'd like you to step forward over here and peruse some of the faces from the past. You've walked past them many times. I don't think you've really looked at them. They're not that different from you, are they? Same haircuts, full of hormones, just like you. Invincible, just like you feel. The world is their oyster. They believe they're destined for great things, just like many of you. Their eyes are full of hope, just like you. Did they wait until it was too late to make from their lives even one iota of what they were capable? Because you see, gentlemen, these boys are now fertilizing daffodils. But if you listen real close, you can hear them whisper their legacy to you.
Carpe diem, seize the day. Robin Williams in 1989 film Dead Poets Society. David Itzkoff is with us from the New York Times. He's written up the life and sad death of Robin Williams in the Times today. And with us right now from Los Angeles, Jamie Masada, founder of the Laugh Factory. Knew Robin Williams for a long, long time. Jamie Masada, welcome to On Point. Thank you for joining us. And I'm sorry for Robin's loss to us today.
Yes, I'm sorry for all of us. We lost one of the most brilliant person, and we should all remember not his death now, remember how much laughter, how much joy he brought to all of us as human being. He brought so much smile to people's face. It was unbelievable. I knew him 35 years, and he was one of the most brilliant comedian I knew, and his brain was almost like a sponge. He loved to make people laugh. It was a joy to watch him, that he kept on doing voices, this, and he never, ever really realized, you know, I know him 35 years. I kept on joking with him and said, Robin, when am I going to see the real Robin? I never saw the real Robin.
Why not? Was he in there? Was he just so private, or was he consumed with comedy? Why not, Jamie?
He was so consumed with comedy, and something about that himself, he was very, I don't know, this is my personal feeling, that he was not really let. I mean, I would go to dinner with him, with John Belushi, with a bunch of people. We used to go out with Paul Rodriguez. We go always out because he gave Paul Rodriguez break or something, and we would go out to dinner, and I never, ever, we would sit down in Carlson, Charlie, have a dinner. Gertz was around. I never saw him, Robin, become really, he's genuinely himself. We all have, you know, we all try to be, you know, funny and this
yeah.
and that, but he was always on. His energy was on. He was so, he had so much energy. He actually hide the depression. He hide everything. He was going with him. With the depression was going on with him. He would never let people know, even the time he had a drink or he had a whatever. And he would always have that high energy, overcome everything.
Jamie, you founded the Laugh Factory, so you've dealt with hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of comedians over the years. Was Robin Williams different in this way?
Robin, I mean, most lot of comedians, you know, you get to know them after 20 years, 30 years. You really, you share a tear together. You share, like last night, I was out with Bob Saget and Dane Cook. Three of us, we went to dinner because we were really crying because we lost one of the good friends.
Yeah.
And you see another side of Bob Saget. tears coming out of his eyes because of what's going on. He lost a good friend. Mm-hmm. You see Dane Cook tears coming out of his. But Robin, his energy was always on. You never really get to know him. I knew him, where I thought I know him very well. But, you know, he always made fun of me. He said, well, he would go on the stage or off the stage. He always would make. I said, Robin, when am I going to see? He said, whenever you stop doing your accent, you speak very good English. I know you go home, you speak perfect English, British accent. This is all jokes. Said, Robin, this is not. I'm tone deaf. He said, I heard that. And he would make a joke out of it. Because I couldn't. He said, you've been in this country 30 years. You should be able to speak English at least. And he got me one of those tapes to learn English.
And he never let it go.
No, he always, I have a lesson for you. He always see me, he have a lesson for me how to speak English. So he was amazing. He was one of the genuinely people, they should remember him. One of the genuinely, he cared for soldiers. He really cared for wounded soldiers.
He was in Iraq, and yes.
Yeah, different places he went, and he tried to help bring smile to people's faces, and he's really genuinely cared for people. I remember one time, I never ever forget, as long as I live, one time, Paul Rodriguez, he had this South Center, is a little Latino school was there. They have auditorium. They want everybody to go perform for them. They were raising money. And we went there, and they didn't have no air conditioning. And it was so hot. Everybody was at that day, particularly that afternoon, it was about 99 degrees. And with 150, 200 kids in this auditorium, was really like boiling.
Yeah.
And Robin went on, Paul Rodriguez went on, and, you know, I said something about thank you very much, whatever. After we did that, it was Robin, I remember the principal of the school called me a couple of weeks later. He said, you know something? I said, Robin Williams, one of the nicest person in the world. I said, I know he is. You don't have to call me to tell me. He said, you know what he did? I said, no, I don't know what he did. He said he came in, he bought a brand new air conditioning. He put in the auditorium for the kids.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want anybody to know.
It's a great story. It's a great story. Jamie Masada, we appreciate your sharing with us from the 35 years that you knew Robin Williams. We're sorry for that loss today. And thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. You have a good day. Thank you so much. And please, everybody, you should really remember Robin Williams as a wonderful person, smile brought to people's face. And if I may say something, and comedy always bring, and smile bring people together. And that's the reason we are trying to do with his legacy. I'm trying to do the funniest person in the world and try to find something to bring peace between Middle East, between Israel and Palestine. So that's another subject we talk about at another time. And thank you very much for letting me talk about Robin Williams.
Jamie Masada, founder of the Laugh Factory, with us from Los Angeles. Thank you for joining us. Leslie in Norwich, Vermont. Leslie, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I think one thing I want to remember in this sad moment of Robin's life and death is mostly his life. And the spirit that he gave to laughing at ourselves, laughing at himself, and being vulnerable is profound and something that's like medicine, sort of in the spirit also of Harold Ramis or how Ellen DeGeneres carries her comedy. We look at ourselves and we can take humor. Is a large gift that hopefully we can grow from and remember Robin by. I think that the note on depression and suicide is important. I think he was an incredibly intuitive man, and sometimes those gifts are like an evil twin. And thank you.
But the humanity, of his vulnerability. You're very right, Leslie. That was a gift. David Itzkoff, stand by. Jimmy Tingle joins us right now. Has spent as a comic producer, writer, actor, filmmaker. Made a lot of people laugh for a long, long time. Jimmy Tingle joins us from Wellfleet, Massachusetts. Jimmy, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom, and thanks for doing this show as a tribute to Robin Williams' life. As Jamie just said, we're trying to remember him as the funny, brilliant, genius comic actor that he was. And he really was that example of what Jamie just said, the club owner from L.A.,
yeah.
Of how he would look at something. He goes, listen, you've been in this country 30 years. Come on, you should be speaking. That's something Robin Williams could get away with.
But it makes us hurt, just hurt to remember all that humanity and all that humor. And then yeah. Here he is gone in his own hand. What was your first thought, Jimmy, when you got the news?
Just devastated, you know, like everybody else. He was loved. I met him briefly once, and you had a connection, not from that meeting, but he was in our homes. He was on the screen. He was at these huge benefits, comic relief. He was using his performance. He was using his talent to help other people. He was a power of example. When he first got sober after John Belushi died, he was with Belushi right near the day before that he passed away. He was a power of example in that respect, going into recovery. And, you know, he was an incredible power of example as a comic. His career paralleled the rise of stand-up comedy in the country. He was started in the little club in the Holy City Zoo in San Francisco, 20, 30 people. You know, it only holds 100 yep. people performing yep. there, developing that act, then going on television. Huge success, and gave rise to a lot of the television sitcoms. It was like this, okay, these comics, they can do more than just stand up and perform in a club. They can be on television, they can be in films, they can be serious actors, and all of the shows that have come after that owe some sort of debt to Robin Williams and his great talent.
Jimmy, Leslie just called from Vermont, and she paid tribute to the humanity of the vulnerability that he shared, but she saw somehow the darkness that he struggled with as a twin, evil twin, she said, of his yeah. comic genius. What do you make of that formula?
I think it's definitely true, not only with Robin, but also for every Robin Williams and for every movie star that struggles with substance abuse, addiction, depression. There are millions that suffer in obscurity. And if anything comes out of this, one of the things I know that he would want people to know and to believe in is that you can get help. People can get help in this country, and the more people talk about it and the more that people are aware of that, of mental illnesses, we have to destigmatize it in the society so people can get help, people can get better. And it's just tragic that Robin died the way he did, but it doesn't mean that it's not a treatable disease, because it is.
Comedian Jimmy Tingle, we really appreciate your spending a couple of minutes with us today, Jimmy. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for all the guests.
Robin Williams, once more here in the 1997 film Good Will Hunting, in a role that won him an Academy Award, the psychiatrist here, treating blue-collar genius Will Hunting, played by Matt Damon. Robin Williams delivers his memorable monologue here on a park bench on the Boston Common, telling Damon about all he doesn't know.
You don't know about real loss. Because that only occurs when you love something more than you love yourself. I doubt you've ever dared to love anybody that much. I look at you, I don't see an intelligent, confident man. I see a cocky, scared kid. But you're a genius, Will. No one denies that. No one could possibly understand the depths of you.
Robin Williams speaking to the Matt Damon character there in Good Will Hunting. David Itzkoff with the New York Times. How rare to be able to deliver that kind of Academy Award-winning dramatic performance and have the comic brilliance of Robin Williams.
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the great values of the speech that you just played is that I think it does allow us into Robin a little bit more than even the comedy that we'll remember him for. That he connected with that role, and he won that well-deserved award for it because there really was something about himself in that performance. That was his way of letting us see a little bit of that vulnerability that we're seeing so much more magnified over these last 24 hours.
And Jimmy Tingle said he changed stand-up comedy. Do you see, over the decades of Robin Williams' fame, people letting loose that spontaneity. I mean, Jonathan Winters was there. Many others have done it as well. But did he bring more of that Ricochet-style comedy permanently to our realm of comedy?
In a way, there's nobody who could do it exactly the way that Robin Williams did. I mean, he was such a dedicated artist in terms of that, you know, the sort of free-form improvisation. I mean, he spent years and years fine-tuning that, and who else could make that kind of commitment with that same level of intelligence? But I think you do continue to see his spirit, that generosity that he possessed. It comes up in so many other performers today. Somebody comes to mind like Will Ferrell, who has also sort of dedicated his life just to showing up in unexpected places and wanting to bring joy to people wherever he goes. Those figures are few and far between, but they're still out there.
A great one lost to us in the death of Robin Williams. David Itzkoff, culture reporter for the New York Times, author of Cocaine's Son, joining us today from New York. We're grateful for your insights, David. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me on.
We'll go out with Robin Williams performing, what have we got here? A Friend Like Me from the 1992 animated film Aladdin. Sorry for his loss. What a great, great actor and comedian. Thanks for being with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
You got a genie for a charge to pay. I got a power bird to help you out. Do what you wish. I really want to know.
You got a list that's 3 miles long, no doubt. Well, all you gotta do is rub like so. Hey-ho, Mr. Aladdin, sir, have a shot, two or three. I'm on the job,
you big nay, Bob.
You ain't never had a friend, never had a friend. You ain't never had a friend, never had a friend. You ain't never had a friend like me.
You ain't never had a friend like me. Ha!